It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a number of high school and college mascots are getting a closer look these days. Our guest says it's time to rethink the use of Crusaders as a school name. First, here's a message we get a lot. If you want to be good at something, you got to decide what that something is early on and then put in the hours, maybe 10,000 hours of work to get better. Happens with a lot of stuff. Picking a major in college, playing a sport, playing an instrument growing up. I started preparing to be a talk show host at age one, for example. Okay, not really. On the other hand, how many of you have heard the opposite message that you should try lots of different things before you decide what you want to do? Or that you may never decide you want to do just one thing, and all those different experiences may leave you better off in the long run. Our next guest says that even though that's not a message we hear as often, research shows that in a lot of ways, it's the right one. Generalists do better than specialists. David Epstein is a science writer and the author of the new book, Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. David, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It seems like, and you write about this, the message in the world is going the opposite of the direction you're looking for here. We seem to put more and more focus on getting specialized as early as possible. Is that right?
That's right. And I think that actually did make sense in a lot of areas previously. So in some it didn't, but you know, in some of the research where I look at things like, say, technological innovation, up until about the 90s, most of the breakthroughs were coming from people who were specialized in the sense that when researchers studied them, they did most of their career in like a single technological class of the U.S. Patent Office's technological classes. But with the explosion of the knowledge economy, where specialized information became much more well disseminated and quickly disseminated, the biggest breakthroughs started coming from people who spread their work over a huge number of those technological classes and usually brought one into another and combined them in these new ways. So I do think that it made sense for a lot of types of work, but a lot of things have changed, although sports is an area where it's really going in that direction and it doesn't make sense and didn't make sense before either.
Yeah, let's talk sports, because that seems one that seems really obvious that specializing. The earlier I start playing soccer or baseball or tennis or whatever, the better I'm going to be in the long run. You provide a couple examples. Sometimes it works out that way. Often it doesn't.
Yeah, I kind of thought that too. What, you know, the notion you were articulating, because the Tiger Woods story, you know, where he was on TV golfing at age two, is kind of the most popular development story ever. We don't really know the stories of people like Roger Federer, for example, which is why I opened Range with these guys, where he played a ton of different sports. His mother was described as pully, not pushy. He continued playing badminton, basketball, soccer long after his peers were more specialized. You know, when coaches wanted to bump him up a level, he wouldn't do it because he just wanted to hang out with his friends and talk pro wrestling. And so my question was, which of these is the norm? And it turns out that it's definitely the Roger pattern. So all across most sports that scientists look at, they see athletes who go on to become elite have this so-called sampling period early, where they learn these broad general skills that kind of scaffold later specific skills. They learn about their own interests, they learn about their abilities, and they systematically delay specializing until later than their peers who plateau at lower levels.
Now let's talk music. If I'm a parent, and I am, and I wanted my kids to be successful classical musicians, and I don't, but if I did, I might think, okay, let's get that violin in their hand at age two and keep it there. How does that pan out?
Yeah, I think that notion really strengthened with the book, The Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, you know, where on page one she talks about the secrets to raising stereotypically successful kids and assigns one of her daughters violin. And to her credit, later in the book, she notes that her daughter says to her, "You picked it, not me," and quits the violin. But that part didn't really get into the public consciousness the same way. But that's really representative of studies of musicians that show the most frequent reason that young musicians quit is the instrument they're playing is not the one that they want to play. So the ones that go on to become elite tend to have that same kind of sampling period that athletes do, where they try a variety of different instruments, and it's sort of once they – and genres, and it's more like once they hit on one that they feel is a fit, that's when their practice hours tend to take off, and they don't plateau the same way.
And you mentioned technological innovation, and when you look in the book at science and the business world too, for that matter – you see a lot of people finding value in being trained in what seem initially to be completely unrelated things. What kind of things did you discover?
Yeah, so and this isn't to say that specialists are unimportant, but for example, as specialists are becoming more and more specialized, what researchers who sort of study business innovation, they have these terms they call exploration and exploitation. What these mean, exploration is like the search for new knowledge and new types of solutions. Exploitation is when you sort of know an area and how you get the most out of it. And increasingly, as people are more and more specialized, the exploration resides outside of their view because they're so narrowly focused, and which is good for exploitation. But this has gotten to such a degree that the guy who used to be the VP of research and development at Eli Lilly started to notice this trend and realizing that some of the most difficult problems that the company had to solve were not being solved by specialists. So he basically stuck them up on the internet. All the scientists thought he was crazy. You know, they said, we're the most specialized, most well-resourced scientists in the world. And he said, then don't worry about it, you know, and solutions started coming in from, like, you know, a lawyer who had worked on a tear gas patent case or something like that. And they were sort of astounded. And it was working so well that he spun this off into its whole separate company called Innocentive that helps other companies post the problems that have gotten them stuck. And it turns out that they're most likely to get solved if they attract people from really far away, from what the researcher who studied Innocentive said, as far away as possible from the problem's home field, they call it. So, like, you know, NASA put up a problem that stumped them for 30 years about predicting solar particle bursts that can damage astronauts and their equipment. And a guy who just retired from a cell phone company solved it in 6 months. And so specialists are important, but the more specialized they get, the more that exploration phase occurs outside of their narrow view.
Talking to David Epstein, author of the new book, Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. I could see why this could be bad for kids if we make them over-specialize too soon. If nothing else, they might burn out on what they want. But something that struck me in your book is how bad this could be for grown-ups. And I've experienced this myself. I'm too old to learn this thing. I'm not going to be successful. I should have started this when I was a kid. That could steer people away from really productive or cool stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And I think one of the you know, the problem is we're usually being rushed to pick what we want to do when we're maybe in our late teens or our earlier mid-20s, and that turns out to be the fastest time of your personality change. And we actually, people, all psychological finding called the end of history illusion. We all underestimate how much we're going to change in the future. And so usually we're trying to pick our careers when we're in the period of the fastest personality change, and we don't really know who we're going to be. And so we don't always get a great fit necessarily. So like some of the research that I thought was, you know, really telling was like a researcher who studied specialization timing in different countries in higher ed systems and found that the kids who had to specialize earlier, pick like a narrow focus, did jump out to an income lead when they got out into the work world because they had more specific skills. But those who specialized later would maximize their what's called match quality, the degree of fit between their abilities, their interests, and the work they do, which is really important for performance and motivation. And they would have a faster growth rate when they got out of college. So they would catch after a couple years the earlier specializers, and the earlier specializers would start quitting in much higher numbers. So essentially, the later specializers were winning the trade-off because they had a little more time for experimentation, and so they could get better match quality and have faster growth rates. The thing is, there's no reason, you know, all the evidence suggests that continues throughout your life. You can keep updating your match quality and getting better and better and better to keep your growth rates higher.
Now, that's tough for a kid and a parent. It seems like a lot of the incentives keep going more toward the vocational training. What career are you going to have with that post-high school or maybe even high school education? If the generalized way is maybe better, how do we change those incentives?
Yeah, it's really difficult. And again, when I think about this and when I started thinking about these issues was when I was the science writer at Sports Illustrated. So I started thinking about it in sports. And when I was living, up until recently, I lived in Brooklyn, and there was a U6 travel soccer team that met across the street from me. And that's not because anybody thinks five-year-olds can't find good enough competition in a city of 9 million people. You know, it's because there's adult financial incentives, and these are customers, and there's all these other forces that are doing it. And that's sort of the same thing we have, you know, in a lot of other areas. And I think we really, one of the themes of Range is that the things that you can do to cause the most rapid, immediate improvements in performance often systematically undermine long-term development. And economic research shows that a lot of the benefit of higher education is not learning stuff. It's actually the ability to have this sampling period and learn about yourself. And so I think we should build more of that into the things we do. And there's nothing wrong with vocational training, but it should just be another thing that you're getting to try. In fact, maybe we should even have opportunities for more diverse vocational training, like what the Army has done that when they were having these incredible retention problems with really talented officers, they tried to throw money at them, and that was a waste of $500 million. The ones who were going to stay anyway took it, and the ones who were going to leave left. But they've had more success with what they call talent-based branching, where they get these high-potential officers, and instead of saying, this is your career track, go up or out, they pair them with a coach, and they say, here's a bunch of career tracks, sample one at a time, reflect on how this fit your interests and abilities with your coach, and then try another one and keep zigzagging so we maximize your match quality. And they've had really good retention success with that. So I have some hope that if the Army, as hierarchical as it is, can incorporate some of these principles, that maybe other institutions can as well.
We're talking to David Epstein about his new book. It's called Range: Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. And David, you say you got some pushback from some people who would say, yeah, maybe that works in some things, but in this particular kid's sport, for example, well, you really do have to specialize. All bets are off there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That was primarily from the soccer world. So I was getting these – when I first started writing about it, I was getting these, you know, international emails that were saying, maybe you're stupid American sports, but, you know, not soccer. So fortunately, that was around 2014 after I wrote a first book. And right on cue, after Germany won the World Cup, a German study came out that had tracked the development of the players that went on to win the World Cup and found the exact same thing. They had – most of their play early on was unstructured. They dabbled in other sports. Didn't matter if it was formal or not. And they kept doing that. Not until they were 22 did they start doing more of the so-called deliberate practice, the technical practice, than people who were in the amateur leagues. And after that, the German researchers did a study where they actually matched kids at certain ages for ability, as they were assessed by coaches, tracked them for several years, and saw who improved more by the next benchmark. And it was those who had done more other sports improved by the next benchmark.
Let's bring on a caller now. Sam is with us in Madison. Sam, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Sam?
So I'm kind of one of the specialists currently. I started in arboriculture. I've been a tree climber since I was 19. And that's definitely one of those things where specializing and being so career-driven has completely eaten my work-life balance. And now I'm 7 years later, I'm looking for a career change and switching into a different trade and looking for something that I can spread my interest more generally and have time for hobbies and kind of not even just career focused, but be more of a generalist in what I do with my time off of work.
Sam, thanks a lot for the call. So 19 isn't super early to get into the tree business, David, but what do you think of what you're hearing from Sam there? He went whole hog into the trees and now he's looking for a way out maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was really interesting and thoughtful, first of all. And again, when we need specialists, we need both. But I think that's not uncommon, where maybe he'll become more of a generalist because now he'll be switching careers, right? And if you do multiple things. But again, he's talking about 19, right? You're at the very beginning of the fastest time decade of your personality change in your entire life. So it's not really surprising that some of your priorities change later. And I don't think he should worry about it too much, because eventually he'll find a way. Like, I was living in a tent in the Arctic when I decided to get into writing, right? And it turned out that my very ordinary science skills became extraordinary when I got to Sports Illustrated. So you can use those old skills to do what's called skill stacking, you know, where you may not be the best at every single thing, but if you stack enough different types of skills, you have this unique experience. And that sort of shows up in, like, Nobel laureate scientists are far more likely in studies of their lives to have outside hobbies, like, you know, art or writing, music, whatever. And they seem sort of disconnected, but in many cases they sort of end up interacting with some of their other interests. So one of the psychologists who studied scientific creativity called it their network of enterprise, where they had these other things that people saw as distractions, but it actually informed their work anyway, even though I think they were just doing it for joy. So from the standpoint of how we know personality changes, Sam's story doesn't surprise me at all. And I hope that as he moves on to whatever he moves on to, he'll recognize that he can take some of the skills he's learned and transfer them, even if that's hard to see for now.
Thanks, Sam, for that call. Good luck as you move on to a new career. We're talking to David Epstein, author of the new book, Range: Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. Back to your calls now. Brianna is with us in Grafton. Brianna, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to ask about, Brianna?
I am kind of a generalist. I have experience in a lot of areas, and I would like to know the best way to approach putting that on a resume for an employer, because I see a lot of employers kind of go, every time they see all the different certifications, etc., that I have.
Interesting. So how can we sell ourselves and the benefits of our generalized experience, David?
And that's exactly one of the big problems. And that's one of the issues that convinced me to do this book, because I was talking about some of this research to people who got scholarships from the Pat Tillman Foundation for military veterans to aid career changes. And they were getting a lot of that because they were all switching careers. So they were getting this, the resume doesn't fit quite perfectly. And I think that's a real problem because, and I think like maybe LinkedIn has accelerated that because you can look through so many kind of square pegs for the square hole of a job that you maybe narrow your search, even though LinkedIn's own research on 500,000 members shows that the best predictor of who's going to become an executive is the number of different job functions across an industry that someone has worked. And yet, I still think we're kind of resistant to that idea. So I think what we have to do, and what I've sort of tried to help some of those, those veterans do, is try to build a narrative out of that resume, where you have a little more narrative and a little less of the bullet points to show like why something grew out of a certain interest, and so they feel more connected, right? So again, like I was in grad school for geology, but I've learned how to draw these connections for my story that makes it seem sort of like a holistic growth path, even if sometimes I had no idea what I was doing prospectively. And so I wish we didn't face this kind of resistance. But it is there. And so I think the challenge is to try to, instead of try to form the resume and you're talking so that you show this sort of consistent growth, even if it's not as linear as other people they look at.
Brianna, good luck. Thanks for calling. We'll go now to Eric with us in Endeavor. Eric, hi.
Hello. You know, I felt marginalized my whole life, and especially by my parents, because I never stuck to one thing and I did a bunch of different trades. And I'm 48 years old now, and I'm very in demand as a utility person. I can do a lot of things, and I have no problem finding good pay and work at this point. And
fantastic. Thank you for sharing that, Eric. Yeah, I was always a fan of utility infielders in my baseball-loving days, David, and it sounds like Eric is that in the trade world.
Well, and I think one of the things there is when you're diversified, like you're diversified in anything you do, like you're diversified in your investment portfolio, you become less fragile to changes that come with the market. So it may take you some time. You may have to invest in those skills and diversifying your skills. But, the work world changes pretty fast, and I'm not sure you really want to hinge on just one skill. In some cases, you can. And I talk about that in the book, these so-called kind learning environments where specialists really thrive. But that's sort of a minority of the world. And I think when you have this diverse skill set, you're a lot less fragile in the career sense to changes.
Thanks a lot for that call. David, what is your message for people in the work world looking to hire maybe some of the callers we've had to maybe change that mindset?
Oh yeah, and I'm just going to pass on the advice that I quote in Range from Abby Griffin, who studies, people who really contribute to their companies over and over and over, and also these serial innovators who make these huge contributions. And basically, her advice to HR people is stop defining your job so narrowly, because you are accidentally screening out your highest potential employees who have these diverse interests, who bring knowledge from other domains that you won't have otherwise, that have contacts in other areas, that have a desire to learn outside of their domain. And so I think we should make our pipelines a little more flexible and look for these diverse experiences, even though they won't always look like the square peg for the square hole. But as Abby Griffin mentions, they are in many cases the highest potential for impact employees, but you're accidentally screening them out if you have too rigid of a template for what you want.
And David, let's wrap up maybe by bringing this home for parents who, with really good intentions, they're worried that maybe I'm failing my kids if I don't get them a head start on this career path, whatever it might be. What would you say to them?
Well, so most of these head start, most of the kinds of programs that try to give kids head starts, whether it's sports or in school, they tend toward the things that cause the fastest improvement right in front of your face. And that's what they do, is they teach so-called closed skills. That's basically knowledge of procedures. And it turns out that whether it's a kid learning math or an athlete, the way to make the best 10-year-old is not the same as the way to make the best 20-year-old. And in many cases, and this was one of the deeply counterintuitive themes for me, in many cases, the things that cause the most rapid short-term improvement systematically undermine your long-term development. So I think the approach to take is not worry about a tiger or Mozart. And by the way, they were not father created. Their fathers first reacted to their displays of prowess and interest. So as Tiger said, his father never asked him to play golf. So you don't have to worry about missing those. And instead, take that talent-based branching approach like the Army, where you facilitate a lot of opportunities. And your job as the coach is to then help the kid reflect on those opportunities so they get the maximum amount of learning about themselves and the world from each of those opportunities.
It's a good place to leave it, David. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was David Epstein, science writer. He joined us to talk about his new book called Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. If you have a story along these lines as a parent, as a kid or former kid yourself, or maybe something from your working life or educational life, love to hear from you. You can always tweet us at Central Time WPR or send us an email, ideas@WPR.org.